He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Here comes Koenig. Koenig in trouble. Trapped. Gets rid of it to Decker. Decker with 7 seconds. Deep three. Top of the key. Off the rim. No good. Rebound tipped around into the arms of Koenig. 2 seconds left. 1 second. Hayes for three. No good. And Duke is king. The fifth crown in school history comes
all
to the
right,
68-63 national championship win.
Yes, sir. Kevin Kugler of Westwood One making the final call. I could not believe how slow Wisconsin seemed in the last couple of minutes of the game. They just were doing their whole deliberate dribble, 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 pass, pass, dribble, dribble. There didn't seem to be the urgency. Plus, they ran out of gas. I mean, I watched them, it was a thrilling thing to see. It was some great games in this 2015 NCAA tournament, but I thought that Wisconsin went to sleep at the end.
Yeah, 14 points in 13 minutes, a turnaround, those last 13 minutes of the game, and that was it. Once Duke went ahead, they never relinquished that lead.
So Duke wins again, fifth time. I don't want to spend a lot of time on sports. You saw it opening day in baseball. I'll talk about that too, but just to give you my final thoughts on the Final Four. There's a civil war going on in my house. That's what was so fun last night. You had Erica's family circle. We're all shooting at each other. Circular firing squad. One of her favorite aunts, Gail, went to Duke. There's a whole contingent of them went to Duke. Erica went to Wisconsin. So you had this nail-biter game. They're all part of this network of competing alumni furiously posting back and forth with every lead change. And I can't believe my Aunt Gail just said this, and I can't believe that my brother Josh just said that. It was a lot of fun to watch them. Arizona was already out of it, so I didn't have an emotional stake, but it was fun to watch. And, not being hip to the ongoing debate over the whole quasi-pro status, of these elite Division I athletes, or to this whole controversy, Duke's got all these freshmen, and they're all saying that most of the freshmen on the winning Duke team are going to be doing 1 year of college ball before turning pro, one and done. 1 year college, then done, then they go into the pros. So Erica asked me very, very innocently. Remember, she went to Wisconsin. She's looking at these pictures of the hugely integrated crowd and the players especially. She asks in her naivete and innocence, where did all these black people come from? Where did all these black players come from? These are the two whitest campuses in the country. And, so she's not, she's just making an observation. It's an innocent and, it's obviously a supportable observation. But what Erica doesn't understand is that at the elite level, the graduation rate, I mean, the kids that actually go to college and graduate, the gap between the athletes, so just check this, Division I elite athletes and the student body generally is more than 30%. In other words, the elite athletes graduate 30% fewer, at a rate 30% fewer than the general student body. So my whole thing is that these players are already pros. I mean, basically, they're not only on the full ride scholarships, but basically they are in a farm team for the pros. The concept way back when was 4 years, you owe your college the loyalty, they groom you and all the rest of it. Now it's all about recruitment. It's all about who gets these big kids first. What do they study? I don't know what they study. One course was Rocks for Jocks. I know it was a geology course. No, seriously. In Arizona, my own alma mater has been subjected to various scandals involving that. It's Rocks for Jocks. They should pass a rule, a couple of things. They should pay these players now.
How much should you pay them?
You got to pay them something. Look what they bring into the school. Look at this guy, Frank Kaminsky. What has he done for Wisconsin as a campus,
he's
as a
changed
school,
the whole campus,
as a
absolutely.
Brand name?
No doubt.
He's put it on the
sure.
map. Compensate them somehow. I'm not sure what or how you do it. Compensate them somehow and pass a rule that if not graduation, at least make them stay 2 years in college, mandatory, where they learn something. Because the fact of the matter is, even these great players, I mean, they say that, that 8 of the top 11 or 12 draft picks are going to come from these two teams, or these two teams and Kentucky, which had the undefeated season until Duke beat them, or Wisconsin rather beat them. even these elite players aren't going to all make it in the pros. They're going to get into the pros, a lot of them, particularly these final four players. They get in the pros, but then they'll churn through them. Some will make it. Some will be injured. They'll have relatively short careers. And then they won't have a college degree to fall back on. So I think that you need to make them stay for 2 years. That's not so arduous, just to sacrifice 2 years. I mean, you see the faces on some of these kids. Yesterday, they were baby faces.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I looked at a kid. I said he looked like a high school sophomore rather than a college freshman. They've let them mature, let them grow, let them be educated at least somewhat. And then they could go into the pros. But in the meantime, because they are postponing their lives, the NBA already has a rule. You have to wait a year after high school before you can become a pro. So, and that's what they're doing. They're becoming pros. They're going to the best program, the best deal they can possibly get, like these elite schools like Wisconsin, like Duke, like Kentucky, like Arizona, these big competitive Gonzaga, these big competitive schools. What they do is they give them the sweetest possible scholarship they can. They skirt the laws on what boosters can do, what the parents can receive. They only now just started flying the families of the players to the Final Four to see their kids in the tournaments. So I think you've got to do more of that, fully disclose it, fully disclose what percentage these big-time sports contribute to the school's bottom line, to their budget, to their endowments. Let everybody know that it is essentially a business. It's almost like the students, the players should be in business because it is a business. It's a huge business. It's bigger than whatever the high roller philanthropist endowments are. It's the biggest aspect of where they get their money. That's why college coaches make more than college presidents. Just be upfront about it. And so when you see these fabulous players on the court and you see that they're not a reflection ethnically or demographically or in terms of income to the student body generally, then understand what's going on. Almost like they're hired gladiators. I get it. You know, it is what it is. I don't moralize about it in any sense. But I wonder what Guns, did we wake Guns up yet? Is Guns, are you awake in Indianapolis, Guns?
I'm all good.
Oh my God, listen to that voice.
So what'd you do after the game?
Well, it was fun. Let's just say it was fun. It was definitely some fun times going on. So,
Guns, I mean, come on, you can tell us what you did. You hire a hooker? What'd you do?
All sorts. I think someone's calling me. I don't even know what's going on in my hotel room right now. No, what it was they kind of just took over the streets. It was kind of wild. It was actually very wild. And then they had just like, it was just craziness. They had like all the bands came out and it was just a lot of fun. I did not wake up next to anybody, although somebody keeps calling my room apparently.
Yeah, I think that's Craig Schwab, your boss. Uh-huh. He wants to know, where were you for the Ima show? So would it have made a difference whether Wisconsin beat Duke or the way it turned out, Duke beating Wisconsin, in terms of the nature of the celebration?
Oh, I think by far, because I mean I tweeted out a picture. There were so many more Wisconsin fans than Duke by far, and even the student section, the Duke student section, like right behind the basket, it was like pretty much like non-existent. There were a lot more Wisconsin fans there than Duke. The celebration itself would have been dramatically different if Wisconsin won. I thought Wisconsin had it the whole entire time too. They just blew it towards the end, and kind of unfortunate because, you know, I kind of wanted Wisconsin to win, because once again, Duke, that love-hate, mostly hate-hate relationship that America seems to have with this team, came through and pulled out.
Well, they've won five national championships under, what's his name, Krzyzewski, Mike Krzyzewski, and they win so often. You know, that's what I was saying. People hate Duke because it's an elite school. Going back to the story we did yesterday about the UVA fraternity gang rape story, and the Duke lacrosse had a similar gang rape story, both stories fraud. The reason the stories got so much currency is that we wanted them to be true. We wanted Duke lacrosse players to be the jerky enough to gang rape, someone they invited a stripper over. or the UVA, you know, fraternity boys to be similarly jerky and guilty of gang rape. So it does have that whole attitude. But you had, let me just talk basketball 1 second here. You had Frank Kaminsky, the big seven-foot Wisconsin guy who was the, I guess he's the leading player in college ball this year. He seemed to run out of steam to me.
Yeah, I mean, because, I mean, the level of intensity that he was playing, I mean, Wisconsin looked so good. And the thing is, they play fast basketball because they're all passing the ball to each other. You know what I mean? That they're moving the ball around. And that was what was so cool about Wisconsin to watch, is that they were a team. They play like a team rather than just an individual player. And the thing with Duke, though, is they had this freshman, Tyus Jones. He ended up.
He was unbelievable.
Unbelievable.
6 foot, 1 inch.
Yeah.
He gets 23 points, most of them in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, 19 points in that second half. I mean, just Okafor only had 6 points up until the last couple minutes, and that's who single-handedly kind of brought Duke to where they were. I mean, it was a great game. Coach K. Krzyzewski for Duke now won in 91 in Indianapolis, won in 2010 in Indianapolis, and then won again last night in Indianapolis.
And it's all about what happens in that final. I mean, Sam Decker was the great Wisconsin, the other big guy. He kind of choked at the end.
Yeah, and they started taking those just wild shots. And they,
a lot
they
of air balls.
Frazzled. Yeah, they looked frazzled, and, you know, it's...
So did anybody break anything yesterday?
Physically, you mean?
No, after the game.
There were some fun things going on in the streets. I didn't really see fires or anything, but just a lot of happy people.
a lot of public sex going on, spitting, coughing, what?
There were some bras and panties on the street corner. So,
you bringing home any souvenirs?
I've got you the Hooters 2015 calendar.
I got that already from Celebrity Apprentice. All right, Guns, we'll talk A-Rod another day. He got a hit in the opening game, which sucked. But have fun,
and
kid.
And they cheered him, too. Why, how are you cheering A-Rod? That's what got me angry.
Wow, I'm a Yankee fan. The Yankees are going to do anything, particularly with the soon I'm going to be pitching for the Yankees. But, Guns, I got to let you go, dude. Congratulations on your inaugural Final Four live coverage from the scene. We appreciate it here at 77 WABC. And ladies and gentlemen, if you like my idea about college athletes being paid, let me know. Rand Paul has just declared himself a candidate for the Republican nomination for president. When we come back, we'll talk about Rand Paul. Murders on the uptick here in the big city. Is this a direct response or reaction or inevitable result of the end of stop and frisk? We'll talk about that, too. And what really happened to that Upper East Side plastic surgeon? Did he kill himself because of a TV show? 866 Geraldo. We'll be right back.
New York's biggest issues right now. This is Geraldo, 77 WABC.
25 minutes after 10 o'clock at the bottom of the hour, the Bronx Borough President Ruben Diaz Jr. will be joining me to talk about the alarming spike in homicides. Nearly a quarter of the city's murders this year, 82 murders all citywide, a quarter of them took place in the Bronx. Why? What's going on? We'll ask President Diaz Jr. coming up. Tariq in Stony Point. What's up, man? How you doing? Thanks for calling.
Good. First and foremost, I love your show.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
I vote in front of your place all the time, keeping an eye on your sailboat over there.
I appreciate that, too. Thanks. What's up, man?
Now, my comments regarding the kids that go to the pros 1 or 2 years after. Kids got a lot of pressure on them, especially if they're good. You know, you have a lot of people telling them after their first, second year, if they get hurt, they could ruin their chances of making millions of dollars. And in a sense, you know, I kind of can't blame them, you know, with all the endorsements that they've seen the professional athletes before them getting all this money. So it's a real catch.
Fair enough, but don't you think it's hypocritical to even pretend that it's about school spirit when it's all about, getting ready for the pros and making the best impression so you get the biggest payday?
I got to tell you, I agree with you. But if I was in that situation, I got to tell you, Geraldo, you know, I'm a commercial pilot and so forth. I would do it as well. Why risk the injury when you know you can go back to college anytime?
It's an excellent point. You're a pilot. I'm fascinated in recent days because of the German wings thing, that Lufthansa thing. Are people looking at you, or Tarek, did you go? Oh, I was going to talk to him, ask him why. Were people
looking
at funny? It was a great question, wasn't it? And I asked it of the two pilots who flew us back from Puerto Rico, and they said it was weird for a couple of days.
I bet.
You know, really, I mean, of course it would. But let me get on to this topic. We worried about this. The reason I understand how controversial it is, and I also understand Noam and I have disagreed about this over the years, how disproportionate the burden of aggressive policing falls on inner city communities. How uncomfortable it must be for a young black or Latino kid particularly, but a young kid generally, but it falls, let's face it, statistically more of a burden on the minority kids, aggressive policing tactics like stop and frisk. The reason I have supported it, just with my street experience, I just believe that you need that kind of almost surrogate parenting to keep the city safe, that there's too many dysfunctional families, too many absentee dads, not enough parenting, aggressive parenting to say to the kid, hey, what's that you got in your pocket? Or to look through their drawers at home to find the Glock in the sock drawer. I really believe that the only way, really, the most effective way, certainly, to keep the city safe is with the aggressive tactics like stop and frisk. Stop and frisk, remember, in a general sense, if there's a reasonable suspicion that a crime is about to be committed, the cop has the right to stop and frisk. But under the regulations as they have been drawn and amended because of the federal judge, what's her name?
Shira Shineland.
Shineland. And her ruling and how Bill Bratton and Mayor de Blasio have interpreted it, you can't just on simple suspicion stop and frisk a kid anymore. I believe there is a direct correlation between the end of stop and frisk and this uptick in homicides. Now, I don't want to be alarmist about it. We're early.
That troubles me and worries me. I know people hear bits and pieces of what I say and may not believe me. But I think all of us in the council are very worried about that. And what we need to do is stop pretending that talking about better policing is cop bashing, because it's not. I very much support our police officers that want a good job. This body cam, I think, will actually protect them. I have no doubt that there are some people that mistell what happens in the interaction with police officers. This body cam can also protect the officer.
I agree. Just like dash cams has protected cops, I think the body cams will too. I got to let you go, council member. I appreciate it. Good job. You know, we're in your corner, and I appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me.
All right, buddy. I have to take a break in 30 seconds, so let me not take your calls now. But you will dominate the rest of this program. I want very much to hear from you about these ideas. Mandatory body cams, but in a larger sense. I wish we could start a hug a cop movement here, because they are what protects this thin blue line. And you know, we have the most racially diverse police force in the nation, the world's safest big city. You know, hug a cop. We can fix this. And body cameras will go away toward restoring trust. We'll be back after this.
Live and local, the Tri-State's most important issues with Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
But I'm strong.
It's National Siblings Day. So before I get back to the conversation, this very important conversation we're having about police shootings of unarmed civilians and the job cops do, good cops do for all of us, I want to talk about National Siblings Day. And who's on the phone?
This would be your younger, taller, better-looking brother, Craig.
My sibling. How you doing, bro?
How are you doing? Happy sibling day, brother.
Happy sibling day to you. Through thick and thin, we stand together, Craig and I, and you and your brothers and sisters, I'm sure and I hope. So last night we were, Craig and I, along with our pal Greg Hart, our lifelong pal, with the Sergeants Benevolent Association out in Brooklyn celebrating these hero cops and the job they do and the difficult job they do. But how touching was it, Craig, to see families of these slain officers?
A melancholy evening, but it was also very inspiring. And I was so proud of you and the words of comfort that you gave to the families that made the ultimate sacrifice. It was really incredible and really touching. And I was so proud to be there with you.
Well, I love you. But, you know, one thing, Craig and I, we were having a debate talking about Johar Tsarnaev, the kid who's now facing the death penalty on multiple charges because of the Boston Marathon bombing. And I said to Craig, I said, Craig, when you were 18, I could, and I'm 11 years older than you, if I told you that we had to blow something up to protect the Jews or the Puerto Ricans or the New Yorkers or, whatever it is, that I think I could have convinced you to commit some terrible act, and therefore I think that this Johar Tsarnaev should not be executed. He should be put away for life, six stories underground in the maximum security prison in Colorado someplace. But Craig said, no, I wouldn't have listened to you. What'd you say?
Well, you know, if that were the target, yes. If it were an unjust target like what happened in Boston, obviously not. 18, you know, I was obviously socially aware and knew what was right.
Ah, you were a stoner punk.
Enemies, you could have definitely convinced me. But you know, and having said that, you've convinced me to go to Iraq and Afghanistan a dozen times each.
Yeah, see how gullible you are.
Sorry, with the goodwill of my own family. But you have had an incredible influence on me my whole life.
Enough about that. I don't want to get mawkish here, but I love you.
Yeah.
And I celebrate National Sibling Day with you.
I love you, too.
All right, brother.
Hi, bro.
So a couple of things. Let me, before I get to your calls, and I promise I want you to, we did this spot, it's what reminded me, we did the live watch spot about this home security. Listen to actress Sandra Bullock. Her home was invaded late at night. She calls the cops. We just got, the case is old, but the guy who's in her house is now being prosecuted. So the 911 tape is played in court, so it's public. Listen to Sandra Bullock with this intruder in her home.
Hello? Sandra Bullock.
1 Britain, the office 3-14-3-14.
Yes, I'm at a room. Someone's running to my house. I'm hiding in the closet. I just saw him walk under the attic. I have a...
man or a woman?
It was a man. I'm in my closet. I don't think he could see anything. I hear it. I hear someone banging on the door.
In the bedroom?
Yeah. I saw the guy go upstairs into my attic.
Okay, they're coming upstairs now.
I hear them. I hear
them. Where's
the attic? Yeah, but they see the door. Look up down the hallway, and you'll see another set of staircases.
I mean, how freaky is this? I mean, that's enough. I mean, imagine Sandra Bullock, this Oscar-winning actress, alone in her home, and here's a guy, a stalker, who in court says, I'm sorry, I love you, Sandy. You know, it's incredible. But the cops steadied her down, and they got there in time to arrest the guy. One thing Craig mentioned, and it's true, amongst cops, going back to the Sergeants Benevolent Association and the hero cops, and we'll get back to this South Carolina situation, there is a brotherhood. And I feel, having covered, you know, cops and the military so much over the last almost half century, I feel that camaraderie and I feel that brotherhood. I feel for them. And I think that there is a situation where too often they are minimized or dehumanized by critics and activists who use very sloppy rhetoric sometimes. It's a difficult job. There's no excuse for what the cop in South Carolina did. But let me tell you, here is the statute, and I'll get to your calls as soon as I read it. Why I think Officer Michael Slager in South Carolina is not guilty of murder, but rather is guilty of manslaughter. Here is how South Carolina defines manslaughter. Manslaughter is the killing of another person, but without the malice necessary for murder. Manslaughter usually involves a person causing the death of another in the heat of passion after experiencing a legally sufficient provocation. Isn't that what happened here? You had the fight over the taser. Isn't that a legally sufficient provocation? A cop making a righteous bust. You have a violent struggle. The man runs away. And there the cop does the unforgivable. He shoots and kills the fleeing Walter Scott, shooting him in the back. But manslaughter depends on the state of mind of the shooter and the sufficiency of the provocation. And I understand there's a fine line between murder and manslaughter, but I think in this case, Officer Slager is on the manslaughter side of the thin line. And here's why it makes such a big difference. Because manslaughter is punishable by in South Carolina by a minimum sentence of 2 years in prison. But the sentences can be as long as 30 years without the possibility of parole. So there's plenty of leeway to punish Officer Michael Slager appropriately for the killing of Walter Scott without convicting him of murder, which I think is way too big a burden for the prosecutor, and it could, blow back on them. So I want them to charge him with manslaughter because that's what I think he's guilty of. Okay, what do you think? What's on your mind? Thank you for your patience. We'll start with Ed in Rockland County. Hey, Ed.
Good morning, Geraldo. How are you?
Thanks for coming on, man.
First of all, thank you. As a 32-year retired member of law enforcement, thank you very much for your support in general for law enforcement and specifically for the Ramos and Lou family. It means a lot to the men and women that are out there pushing radio cars around New York City. So thank you again, and please keep up that good work, Geraldo.
All right, what else is on your mind?
Okay, I think it's probably the first time I've ever agreed with Councilman Williams, but for very different reasons. I think respectfully that Councilman Williams has a deep-rooted anti-police bias, and that's evident, and it's kind of ironic that he's discussing police morale when he's one of the reasons why morale is so low. But moving on to the body cameras, I think, and I had an epiphany on this, I was against them, but then I did some work in police consulting in Detroit and Oakland and places like that where they are being used, and I saw that there is some merit to them, that they can be used to exonerate cops and to show that sometimes people are making false assertions against police officers in contact situations. So I'm very willing to explore something like body cameras on New York City police officers as long as it's done in a very measured and controlled manner.
Amen, Ed. I appreciate the intelligence of and the fairness of your remarks, and thank you for your 32 years of service. But I think that when you, Jumaane Williams, and I all agree, there's something there. And ladies and gentlemen, regardless of the cost, and I don't think it's that big money, and President Obama has asked for something like $40 million nationwide to get this thing going. Wouldn't it be reasonable? Because remember, let's take the South Carolina situation again, and Officer Slager shooting Walter Scott. And everything that happened, you have the dash cam that shows the stop. The dash cam shows Scott running away. A body cam on Officer Slager would have shown the officer in pursuit. And then importantly, it would have showed the physical struggle between the cop and Scott. Scott fearing he's going to be arrested again for the fourth time for non-payment of child support. But he's fighting with the cop. You never fight with a cop. You never. When a cop says, halt, halt. When a cop says, give me your license and registration, don't argue your case. Give him your damn license and registration. Don't fight with a cop. Don't argue with a cop. The cop's not the judge. The cop's not the jury. The cop's not the civilian complaint review board. Don't argue with the cop. Cop may be out of line. Cop may be obnoxious. The body cam would show that too. So I think that everyone, right, left, red, blue, conservative, liberal, everybody agrees. And if you disagree, call me also, that these body cameras would go a long way toward increasing trust. I understand lawyers will get their grubby hands on them and they'll be, it'll muck stuff up in some ways. But I think it'll work itself out. We'll get a system that is reasonable. where the rights, the constitutional rights of the perpetrator, the alleged perp, and the bystanders, and the innocents, and the officer, importantly, are honored.
New York's biggest issues right now. This is Geraldo, 77 WABC.
6 minutes before 11 o'clock here on 77 WABC. It is your turn at 866. Geraldo, what is on your mind on this important morning? Friday morning, April the 10th. Thank God it is Friday. However drizzly and chilly and miserable it is, the sun is coming at some point. Ken, in New Jersey, you're the first up. What's on your mind, buddy?
Hi, Geraldo. Big fan of yours.
Appreciate
Thank you
that.
So much. Geraldo, while you're supporting this call for a federal investigation on all these type of shootings involving police, I would also equally ask you if you could support that the murder of a police officer while performing a duty would automatically initiate a capital murder charge federally, as well as a civil rights investigation, because civil rights of police officers, while they're protecting us, should be protected.
I have to ponder the legality of that, Ken. I have no, instinctive objection to it. I believe that you're on to something. Philosophically, I appreciate that that would be even-handed for the feds to both protect vigilantly against police excesses of force, but also protect the police as a protected class. They're not federal employees. There may be a problem there, but because they are deputizable in emergencies by the feds, you might be onto something, and I certainly don't reject it, and I appreciate a very intelligent call. Thank you. And Nanuet, Marcus, what's up, man?
Yeah, I sort of agree with you with the incident in South Carolina, but I want to know two questions. If the perpetrator wasn't anything but black, even if he had a struggle with him, would he have shot him in the back 8 times?
I don't know the answer to that. I would hope that it would be an even-handed approach. But listen, I tell you, anybody who denies that there's a different reaction to a black person than a white person in whatever context, you're denying human nature. You know, it is it's past debate that black people in many circumstances are treated in a way that is much more harsh than white people. I mean, that is a fact of American life. We'll be back with much more.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
ABBA, wonderful ABBA, the Swedish group. They won the prize, the Euro Cup, whatever that competition is, propelled them to stardom and fame, and their catchy tunes were so good. They strung them together and made Mamma Mia, the wonderful musical, been running, I don't know, 13, 14 years. It's going to close in September, so this morning, on this important morning, April the 10th, thank God it is Friday. We are featuring the music of ABBA. ABBA. I was on Fox and Friends this morning. I'll be on Bill O'Reilly's show tonight talking about this this terrible police shooting in South Carolina. But I have a different contextual approach to it. Last night, I was the MC and got a chance to speak to the Sergeants Benevolent Association of the NYPD, their Heroes Award. And I got a chance to talk about the murders, the bloody assassination, the execution of Detectives Ramos and Liu in our city in December, and how that sloppy, vile, anti-police rhetoric inspired the lunatic to take his gun to assassinate those hero cops. Ramos and Liu met their families last night. It's still gut-wrenching. The loss still so raw. Ramos had a couple of sons. Liu was the only son of his immigrant family, striving family from China. It's just so sad. Also honoring the families of two other cops, Michael Williams and Dennis Guerra, who who also died in the line of duty last year or so. My point in bringing that into this discussion of South Carolina and what Michael Slager, the officer, did there is that cops have a tough, often thankless, dangerous job. And too often we judge them from the comfort of our homes, the safety of our homes, safe that they are protecting us. We judge them, we judge their actions without trying to walk in their shoes, understanding the peril that they face in the hard, cruel world. So now to South Carolina and my somewhat controversial stance. I see Mediaite is running an article on my point of view. My point of view is that the South Carolina police officer, Michael Slager, when you see the dash cam video and you put it in the context of that horrifying cell phone video of the actual shooting, it shows that the cop made a righteous traffic stop and he behaved professionally until Scott, who apparently had this fear of being arrested as he had been three times before for the non-payment of child support, until Scott bolts. Then you have eyewitnesses. You don't have this on video, but you have eyewitnesses saying that the pair struggled as Officer Slager tried to get his taser out and employ the taser. And the taser was shot. I don't know if it was effective. I don't know if both of the prongs hit Scott or not. And then you cut to the cell phone video of the officer doing the unforgivable, shooting Walter Scott as he fled, hitting him five times in the back. But you know now, seeing the dash cam video, that this cop had his adrenaline pumping. He had had this physical tussle with Scott. This was, in my view, the passion of the moment, a legally sufficient provocation, inexcusable in every way except that it wasn't murder. Remember what I said about putting yourself in the cop's shoes before you judge it. Slager did not commit murder. There was no premeditation. He didn't leave his house or get out of his car with the thought that he was going to shoot and kill Walter Scott. You had the struggle, and then you had the shooting, the unforgivable criminal shooting. But it wasn't murder. It was, I think, manslaughter. As manslaughter is defined in South Carolina, it's not much different here in New York or New Jersey or Connecticut. Manslaughter is the killing of another person, but without the malice necessary for murder. Manslaughter usually involves a person causing the death of another in the heat of passion after experiencing a legally sufficient provocation. That, I think, defines very specifically and correctly what this officer did. Now, being charged and convicted of manslaughter, there's a huge range, and herein lies the difficulty in punishment in South Carolina and elsewhere, here included. Manslaughter can be punishable in this instance by a minimum sentence of 2 years in prison, which should obviously be insufficient given the severity of the crime the cop committed. The sentence of manslaughter, though, can be as lengthy as 30 years without parole. And what I submit to you, ladies and gentlemen, this morning here on 77 WABC is that Officer Slager should be charged with and will be convicted of manslaughter. If the prosecutor there is stubborn and sticks only with that murder charge, he's going to lose this case. This cop's going to be acquitted of murder. But I think that a manslaughter conviction and sentencing would be appropriate. 10, 15 years, whatever. Let the jury and the judge decide. But it's manslaughter, it's not murder. So what do you think? Here's David in the Bronx. We'll start with you, David, and I'm going to get to all your calls. Here's David. What's up, man?
First, I want to say, vaya, boricua, como estás?
Okay, vaya, vaya. All right, brother.
Listen, the murder charge is going to be pleaded down to manslaughter. I think we all know that. And second of all, the black community has put a bad image on themselves, which cops have in their mind when they walk on the streets. When you have videos promoting violence, kill cops, drugs, guns, cops don't forget that when they walk around.
I agree with you, man. I think that the whole hip-hop world, and I got in such trouble for saying it, when you extol the virtue of violence against police,
exactly,
you are paving the way for these kinds of tragedies.
Yeah, and the cops, when they hit the streets, they're going to have that in their head, and they're going to approach you differently. And unfortunately, your demeanor, the way you walk, talk, and dress, unfortunately, that's going to be judged too. And, you know, they put it on themselves to a certain point, I think. And I think the entertainment business ought to, you know, kind of adjust.
Oh, boy, everything you say is true, my Boricua brother. But still, what this cop did to this man in South Carolina is absolutely unforgivable. And it is incidents like this that give too many black families, particularly the moms, the absolute paranoia that their kids are more in danger of falling afoul of the cops than they are the crooks. And that's a tragedy in American life. In Brooklyn, John's on the line. What's up, man?
I have two solutions, Geraldo. My first one would be something you've never heard. There should be a law passed that no police officer should ride alone in the United States of America any longer. It's no longer safe. It would be good for the citizens, and it would be good for the officers.
Not a bad idea. And I think in New York, they don't ride alone anymore.
And then my second solution is, let's do two sets of laws, one for blacks, one for whites. We've already decided that we're going to divide society, and everybody's being treated differently. So
why are you being facetious now when you had such a smart idea? Why are you now being sarcastic?
Because it's an absolute dialogue that needs to be discussed on an act level. With the last three incidents that have been facilitated by the media, all three of those victims, or whatever you want to call them, were resisting arrest. So if you're going to resist arrest, it's going to up the ante on what's going to happen. Now, I'm not condoning the outcomes of any of the cases, but for some reason...
All right, let me separate. I think there's some smart ideas in there amidst the sarcastic rhetoric, but I want to stress what John just said. A cop stops you, there's two answers, the yes sir answer and the no sir, or yes ma'am, no ma'am. Don't fight, don't run. You're causing a situation to develop where a tragedy is inevitable. Don't resist arrest. I mean, Eric Garner, God bless him, the big man on Staten Island. You cannot resist arrest. You've got to listen when the cop says, turn around, give me your hand. You can fight it later. Get a lawyer. Make a complaint to the Civilian Complaint Review Board. Make the police internal affairs aware of what your beef is. But don't try to fight it on the street. What are you, crazy? You're going to create a situation where you're going to give a cop sufficient legal provocation to hurt you. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't be macho. Macho is the blueprint for tragedy. In Vernon, Jamie. Hey, Jamie. Is it Jamie?
Yeah, it's Jamie.
Hey, man.
Hi, Geraldo. Two things. I hope Sandra Bernhardt is smart enough now to buy herself a gun and protect herself. And secondly, I had a request for a videotape from the police, and it disappeared. And the judge was upset about it. So I think with this...
Wait, give me another sentence on that. What do you mean? What videotape?
Well, I was stopped, and the police officer had an attitude and everything. And, I was disputing the ticket. So we requested the videotape to see how his attitude was, you know, what it was. So when the judge requested it... they couldn't find it.
What department is this?
This is West Milford.
And they said that it was unattainable, that it was lost?
Well, it was what they showed.
Let me ask you a question. You and the cop obviously had a bad experience, right?
No, I didn't say anything. He came up to the window, and I said, what did I do? And he said, follow him too close. I said, you pulled out of the side street without stopping or yielding. I did not say another word the whole time he gave me the ticket.
And was the ticket for following too close?
Following too close.
What was the resolution of your appeal?
I went I gave the police officer a ticket and he for failing to yield right away, and went in front of the head of municipal court judge in Passaic County. I acted as my own attorney. He had a PBA attorney, and both cases were dismissed.
Well, so it was resolved. You stood up for your rights. You did it in court as you should have. And, you know, you ended up with a happy ending there. And that's the way, Jamie, I appreciate the call. That's the way you resolve these things. Don't be a smartass. I beg you, don't be a smartass when it comes to cops. Their job is too hard. Their job is too dangerous. There's too many other things going down. You know, now terrorism, all the rest of this stuff. Give them a break. They're on our side.
The sound of the city, Geraldo, where New York comes to talk. 77 WABC.
Got to be your man who walk my linen in shoe. Then you really might know what it's like to sing to do. Then you really might know what it's like.
This is the song that the cop, Slager, Officer Michael Slager, was playing in his radio car when he pulled over Walter Scott, allegedly for the busted taillight. So this is Everlast, What It's Like. So, Chris, did Everlast ever get communicated with about the cop use of his song this week?
Yeah, there was a blurb in the Post today. They asked him for a comment. He said he really had nothing to say, and then he posted a link on his Facebook account to the song F the Police.
F the police.
Yeah. Well, I guess that was his commentary on the whole thing.
Oh, gross. That's terrible. All right. Well, anyway, that was the song he's played. Hi, you're on the air. What's up? Hello? Who's this very special caller? Hello?
Hello?
Hi, who's this?
Is this Geraldo?
Yes, it is.
Well, this is a caller who's wishing you a very happy Siblings Day.
Ah, I get that voice. Is this my older, more beautiful sister?
This is your older, not necessarily more beautiful, but much shorter sister. calling to wish my little brother a happy day.
Irene Rivera Hurst on the line. Now, you know, a lot of people, we get a lot of callers.
I'm to tell you I love you.
I love you, too, on this National Siblings Day. Get a lot of callers.
National
Irene, tell
Day,
us briefly
right?
What you, you know, you were. Where were you the superintendent of schools and all that?
I was a principal at Muncie Park School in Manhasset, and I was a professor at Hofstra University.
That's my sister, my smarter sister, my beautiful sister, Irene. How you feeling? So grandma's coming home today.
Not smarter, just nerdier, I think.
Our mommy is coming home from the hospital.
Mommy is on her way home from the nursing home to her own home. And baby brother Craigie is going down there because I'm in the middle of physical therapy trying to get my legs to work.
Yeah,
so
it's old age is a bitch, isn't it? Wait, there's another special caller on the line. Hold on, Irene. Who's
okay.
This? Hello.
Hi.
Who's
Big
this?
Hi, how are you?
Oh, it's my beautiful younger sister.
It's the baby sister.
Hi, baby sister Sharon. How are you?
I am great and very excited. In a half an hour, I leave to go pack our mommy up and bring her home from the Sarasota Bay Club and where she's been she's been in the hospital since last month and with a broken hip, and we're so happy that she's coming home today.
So describe what you've done with the condo, with the house at Whispering Sands. What's grandma going to see when she walks in the door?
Well,
or when you carry her in the door?
Well, no, actually, when we wheel her in.
Wheel her in the door, okay.
Right. When we wheel her in, she's going to see her bedroom, which has been modified for a hospital bed, and the doorway, of course, has already been widened. This building is for 55 and over, so she's totally prepared for that. And she's already got her bathroom is already all set up with grab bars, et cetera.
Yeah, any signs? I know you're big on signs and balloons.
Actually, of course, I wasn't going to mention it. You know, me and Mylar and Helium are very good friends.
Yeah.
But Sharon, what do you use them for? That's the question.
Right.
Well, aside from being able to talk funny, you know, how are you?
Yeah. Geraldo, you forgot to say that Sharon is the younger, the funnier one.
Younger, funnier, the four of us. We miss our dear brother Willie, who passed. He's the only one who's done, who hasn't checked
in. I was talking to Marianne yesterday.
Yeah, his
and
wife.
And we were saying that we talk about my daughter in my act because she said to me, leave me out of it.
Yeah, I would never talk about my children.
Yeah,
I mean,
you know, you
it's
just
so
make
difficult.
Sure that you watch those tender little feet.
Right. Well, Joy Behar, we love you.
Thank you, Geraldo.
And I appreciate you coming on.
Okay, hon, I'll talk to you again.
All right, see you. Bye-bye.
Get Geraldo now. Get in on New York's most important stories. 866-GERALDO, 77 WABC.
Almost 30 years ago, I did a profile of Hall & Oates. That's John Hall. It's Daryl Hall, John Oates. That's John Oates, his birthday. Private Eye, Hall & Oates. Blue-Eyed Soul was my angle at the time. Hall & Oates, you know, you were mentioning the videotaped mayhem in the Brooklyn McDonald's where we watched those girls savagely beating the other girl. And what was the sentence of the 14-year-old you reported?
Sent to a group home. Some sort of juvenile group home.
My point is, where do you send them? What do you do with a 14-year-old? A juvenile group home. I can't imagine what that means. I mean, it's not a group home like you have for the developmentally disabled. You know, is it a mini prison? You know, what is it really? How, you know, we had the fellow earlier had this omnibus plan for dealing with young urban criminals, recruiting them and militarizing them and getting them ready to enlist or going to work farms like the Israeli kibbutzes, etc. You know, I don't like that idea either, but I don't know what you do. What do you do with these young people? You know, it's just so frustrating. Now, here's the 14-year-old. She's in the community home. I guess she was participating in beating up the other child in the McDonald's. Will the group home make her better?
You know, of course, your instant thought is no. Because she's probably in there with other offenders.
But it's all caught on video. And that's another caller pointed out, you know, the reason criminality has dropped is that even a real dopey criminal knows that if he's on the street anywhere, virtually anywhere in the city of New York, in the five boroughs, there's a camera someplace that will get a shot of him or her in action. And then it's a matter of time. Like the Boston bomber. I mean, we're seeing now is Tsarnaev, the younger kid, Jokhar Tsarnaev, is being sentenced. He's going to be convicted today. I mean, basically, he pled guilty. But it's going to be whether or not he gets the death penalty. But the way they caught them was to go through those videos, the painstaking approach to that, all that forensic evidence. They poured through that video. They kept seeing that kid with that white hat turned around. And the whole phone call and all the rest of it, they pieced that case together brilliantly. I don't think it was 12 hours before they had the picture out of who they thought the perps were. But the one thing I wanted to say, and, you know, I didn't really intend to talk about it, but I read something very interesting from Cardinal Sean O'Malley. He's the Archbishop of Boston. And Boston suffered so grievously. And I think that Boston was really, you know, in a sense, after 9/11, Boston directed its compassion at New York, despite the fact we're bitter sports rivals. It was all about New York and New York suffering. The thing is that Boston considers the Marathon bombing as kind of their 9/11, although obviously it was a much smaller event than the mass murders that took place on 9/11/2001. But Boston is very emotional. Boston strong and all the rest of that. The whole city kind of coming together. And now this prosecution of the kid, you know, despite the fact that the conclusion is inevitable that he'll be found guilty of these three homicides and a lot of other federal crimes, many of which carried the death penalty. I just don't have the emotion for it. I'm just looking at I'm thinking of my brother Craig, who's 11 years younger than me. When Craig was the age of this kid on the time, you know, the date of the bombing there, I think that I could have convinced Craig that this was something we had to do for our religion, for our race, for our neighborhood, for our town, for our dad. I could have led him down the primrose path where he would have done something hideous, largely because I kind of supplanted his free will with my strength and the deference that he shows me, certainly in that age that he showed, and just the hierarchy involved. Plus, there's so much mishmash of all the ideological stuff. They're killing Muslims. They killed Aunt Muhammad or whatever the hell it was back home and wherever. I don't see what Boston, and this is my bottom line here, is my long ramble getting to this. I think that Cardinal O'Malley is right about the death sentence and this kid. And I call him a kid because he was 18 or 19 when it happened. His brother's much older, deep in his 20s, and had that authoritarian relationship with him and probably committed other crimes, probably committed other murders. I just don't see what good would come of killing Tsarnaev. It's the same way I felt about the one,
I'm blanking on the name.
One from Arizona.
Yeah, right.
Jody Arias, right. What's the point? I mean, what does society gain? What do we glean from the execution of these people? I think that when you have someone going to the Burger King and they put people in the freezer and they kill seven people, it's a no-brainer. Put them in the freezer, kill them. You know, I have no compunction about it. It's not that I don't believe in the death penalty. It's just there are times when you need revenge. And I think revenge is a very healthy, natural, traditional emotion to have. Sometimes you need revenge. You need an eye for an eye. But in this case, I don't see what Boston gains. I don't know.
And people would argue with you, that's the problem with, of course, the death penalty is how it's applied. It's all over the place. In Texas, you're more likely to be killed than you are anywhere
else. Oh, they would already have been with the drip.
That's why people complain. Why shouldn't it be applied here as opposed to somewhere else?
If it wasn't for Tamerlan, if it wasn't for the big brother.
But he was involved. He brought a pressure cooker with him just like his brother did.
I dig that, but I think the death penalty, I don't even mind torture in appropriate cases, but the death penalty I'm not sure that it evens the score in any way. I'm not sure that the victims' families will be better off as a result of it. I'm not sure. I mean, I don't want him to live the way Scott Peterson is living, on the Ritz-Carlton death row in San Quentin, where he has a beautiful view. He has open cell doors. You know, they all sing Kumbaya, play basketball all day. You know, I don't want him to live that kind of life. But remember, California is a state facility. In California, just the liberal stuff is gone amok there. But this is a federal rap. He'll be six stories underground in Colorado. I mean, he's not ever going to even see daylight again. Let him live that long life and ponder what he did to these families rather than give him the easy way out and make him another martyr as if, these nut jobs needed any more martyrs. I take one quickie here before the intermission. Dan in Jersey, what's up, Dan?
Yeah, hi, Geraldo. I was going to call about the basketball. But
sure,
I want
what?
To discuss this,
tell me first, what are you going to say about basketball?
In basketball, I think if you pay these guys, you'll ruin it because it'll be like a minor league system for the PS, and nobody will care about the schools. I think all these guys who don't make it to the NBA should be stay in school until they get a degree and actually get education out of it, even if the NBA have somebody else.
So you think that education should be mandatory, that they have to stay? If they commit to the program, they have to stay?
They have to get education out of it, at least, yes. Now, as far as the Tsarnaev boy, I think he should be executed because these kids are not stupid. You need to send a message to these radicalized youth that there are penalties, real penalties, to be paid for what you do.
You think, wasn't it Rolling? I appreciate the call, Dan. Small call. Wasn't it Rolling Stone that had him on the cover looking like a rock star?
I think it was, yeah.
Had the kid on the cover? I mean, Rolling Stone, who did the gang rape story. Rolling Stone, I mean, I don't know what Rolling Stone has happened, what's happened to them. They become so ideological.
Well, they were always ideological.
But they were ideological in, you know, sex, love, and sex, drugs, and rock and roll, not... But they're not so political.
You know what's so interesting is, you know, you talk to other reporters who work there and they say the layers that you have to go through for any kind of investigative piece is exhaustive. And so they were
shocked.
In terms
of the vetting.
Yeah, the vetting. And that's why this story is so shocking about
Matt Taibbi,
right?
He writes for them. He's terrific.
And Matt Taibbi is the person who, one of the people who said that. He said, if I wanted to do a story, it was amazing how many hurdles I had to go through, which is rightfully so, especially doing a story like that, till it made the magazine. And so I think he's just as shocked as everybody else that this story got out.
I hope that that is true. I don't know it to be a fact, but it was, I'm telling you, it all comes down to Rolling Stone wanted the story to be true. And that's why they suspended their own skepticism and professional disbelief. They wanted these frat boys to be cruel and savage and nihilistic and self-involved and brutal and careless. They wanted that story to be true. And God, who knows? You know, it certainly is the stereotype. You know, where do stereotypes come from? They come from truth. They come from statistics. You know, I think fraternities are really being reassessed just generally. You see, Rutgers just banned all frat parties.
All parties for the rest of the year.
For the rest of the year?
Yeah.
I mean, just for this year?
For this year, well, they've had some problems. One girl died of alcohol poisoning back in September, and there's been some other incidents along the way.
Geraldo on the 77 WABC app. Get it before you really need it. WABCradio.com.
Welcome back. Noam's doing a photo op. What's that? What are you doing there? That's for like a girly magazine? What is that? We're on the air. Mike, I'm going to kick one quick call. Mike, what's your idea?
Yes. Hi there, Geraldo. Yeah, about this kid, Soraya, the one who was responsible for the Boston bombing.
Right.
Okay. First of all, there's no, you can call him a kid or call him anything you want. He is responsible for his actions. He and his brother, together, they knew what they were doing. All right. And as of right now, he's lost one of the most important people in his family. So, like, there's no way in the world that you could possibly rehabilitate this kid. You let this kid go, or you put him into something.
Oh, I'm not saying let him go. I'm saying let him rot in hell. Let him rot. Exactly. Why give him the favor of martyrdom? That's what they, you know, this is what they want. They want to be martyrs. Put him 6 feet on, 6 stories under in Colorado. I think that's the best way to do it. I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to talk about Rand Paul because I really find him very intriguing. And I want to talk about it tomorrow because I think just from the tenure of the calls that we get here, I think we have a very motivated and intelligent listenership that kind of spans the ideological spectrum. And I want very much for you folks to tell me what you think about Rand Paul when we break down his ideas. Now, what I was about to say about you all listening is my sense is that you have a libertarian bent as I do, a kind of a live and let live. You don't mess with me. I won't mess with you. If I want to smoke dope in my backyard, as long as it doesn't drift over the fence to your backyard, then it's none of your business. I think that's the Rand Paul approach. We don't use the military overseas unless it really is in the vested interest of the United States, and demonstrably so. So we'll talk more Rand Paul tomorrow. Dow up 85.